Hey guys, and welcome to another episode of Spill and Guts Podcast. You're listening to, oh, Kitty, you scared me. Horsey, you scared me too. Luke Bradley.
And you are also listening to Carmen Electra's breast implant from Scary Movie, Jack Carnavage. I love how we both went for a Scary Movie vibe, not the...
Well, I just thought that might be a little bit more entertaining. Mm. And it's still in the same vein of what we're talking about now.
It's a sequel.
Yeah, I mean, before we get into it, I would like to just let everyone know that it is officially Screamtember. It's also aka pre-Halloween. That's what I call September, is like pre-Halloween. Because
pre drinks for Halloween. That's what it is.
Exactly. Well, have you gotten into any of the new American Horror Story yet?
So I have not watched both episodes yet, but I did watch the first episode. And what I can say is I'm pleasantly surprised. Like, I'm actually like, I really enjoy it. It's finally like scary again, you know?
Yeah. And I feel like, I don't know, it's a weird one for me because I've now seen a couple of episodes and like it is fucking like weird. When like, and you think, oh my god, like how, like it, usually, like I don't know, with most of the seasons, there's, even though like we're in this sort of like horror world, this sort of like a sense of I don't know, like not order, but it's a weird, I feel like this new season is just like wacky and out there, and because obviously we're getting two seasons in one, so we're only getting like, I think like six episodes of each or something like that, so we're getting
is that what's happening?
Yeah, so we're getting like two minis in one.
So it's just going to play out the story for like six episodes and then there'll be another one. I'm okay with that because I think the problem with American Horror Story is after about the sixth episode, it really starts to go down the drain and it just starts to make shit up that doesn't even make sense with the start. So
I always feel like around the 6-7 episode mark, it just like usually each season has like a really weird turn where it like tells some completely like unrelated to the plot story and then follow up right at the end and try and link it. You're like, don't try and do that to me, Mr. Murphy. Like, don't try and like say that this weird thing, then no, don't do it. Yeah. You're doing too
like
much.
In Asylum, when they introduced at the start aliens, never talked about it for the whole season, and then the last episode wrapped it up in 15 minutes. The alien abductor, he brought her back, she was probed goodbye, and then just brought her back in. And there you go, that was it. Bob's your uncle.
Yeah, exactly. And I've just watched an episode where Angelica Ross comes into it, and so does Leslie Grossman. And let me just tell you, these two are just like MVPs. I don't know what it is, but I feel like Leslie Grossman gets some of like the best like dialogue and lines in. I think because her so Leslie Grossman, she was the killer in 1984. You know, she's one of the neighbors in Cult. Yeah. She was like that. She was Coco in.
And Pose.
Pose? No.
No.
No, so Leslie Grossman, like, so right. So Angelica Ross played that, played the nurse, in 1984.
Okay, no, I see.
Leslie Grossman played like the blonde, what's she called? The blonde serial killer.
Yeah. The blonde one, yeah, because in the very first episode, she's obviously the agent who is on the phone. Okay, so that's getting like weird. Even though we sort of expect that with American Horror Story, but is it like a good sort of weird, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, they tried to like hint with the whole like vampire vibe in Hotel. I just don't think it kind of went the way they wanted it to go. And with this, because it's kind of like vampire-esque, but it's not in the typical sense. They haven't tried to like, oh, we're doing vampires now and we're going to do it like everyone else. It's very much like, I don't know, I think like a really kind of weird but cool idea of how, you know, it's these pills to make you like do better in whatever like talent you've got.
Is that like going to be like a part of the story? Because the last time I dropped off, he took one of them little black jelly bean pills.
Yeah.
And obviously that's going to escalate to some point.
Yeah, so basically that, I mean, I don't know if you got it, but like that little pill makes the person who's already got a talent in whatever kind of, like, it could be,
yep,
it's not just like, it's not like just in writing, it could be like whatever talent you've got, it then just makes that like the shit, the best ever. But then with that comes this like bloodthirst. So it's not really, so it's vampires, but it's not how you think, because the way they kind of, yeah, it's not like they've got like, they've now got fangs, but they do like make their own. It's really, it's kind of, yeah.
That's,
it's good.
See, that makes sense then, why there's all these people that are like influencers in some sort of way, shape or form that come to this sort of like sleepy town. Do you know what I mean? So I'm sort of getting that vibe anyway. All the red lights, Sarah Paulson, obviously, she's always killing the game. My favorite character she's done in a while is that crazy, smelly looking, what's she called again? Something Karen. I think she is just called Karen, but they call her like,
yeah, what do they call
it? Like Schizo Karen or something. Yeah.
And I like the fact she, like, every character she comes into contact with, she just like curses them out and like calls them like a motherfucker. You're like, oh, she's got issues.
Have you been watching the rest of Slasher by any chance?
Okay, so I've only watched the two episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I've not kind of continued yet. It's something that I'm actively watching. I just haven't got around to it yet, but I need to.
So I done the same as you. I watched two episodes. I then went to watch the third one. I got halfway through it and stopped. And I just, like, for a while, I just couldn't get back on the wagon. I just wasn't feeling it. I'm like, I'm really not feeling this season. Was watching through the third episode and just, like, chaos was happening. But, like, just the most dramatic extra chaos, I mean, ever. There's like a whole fight scene that kicks out between three of the women, and they're like full on, like, you're next, just like literally beating each other up in the kitchen and using all these tools and like biting her finger off, and like really OTT, over the top, like,
okay,
this is so beyond like realistic. But it took me a while to get used to it, but now I've adjusted to how like silly this season is, but how it's being so deliberately chaotic, I've actually started to now enjoy it. Now that I'm like, okay, you're deliberately acting the fool. Like, you are purposefully being ridiculous as fuck. And
right, okay. So is that the point? Is the whole vibe that it is like over the top and ridiculous? Is that a thing, or is that something that you're like just making up?
I would be very surprised if that wasn't deliberate, because some of the shit that happens, you watch it and you're like, there is no way in hell anybody in real life would make this decision, act the way they're acting, or do what they do just because they're a bit of a cunt. Like, I can't even explain it. They're just all fucking mental, and they'll just like kill it, just run around like killing each other. Like, so not even the killer kills people, they just run around murdering each other and trying to kill each other. And it's like, after a while I got under it, I was like, you know what, I'm weirdly addicted to this nonsense it is. And is it the weakest season? Yes, but I cannot lie and say that I am thoroughly enjoying the mayhem. It is mayhem, Miller.
And do you feel like you're closer to figuring out who it could be?
Well, you think there's loads of them, and then you realize like a bunch of them's dead, and there's like five of them left. And then I'm like, and anyone that I think it is dies.
Right.
I'm like,
okay.
Oh, fuck. And then I'm like, now it's got to the point where I feel like it's far too obvious if it is the person I think it is.
Right.
But then I'm like, it can be anyone else. Like, literally everyone's dying, and like to the point where they're leaving just the guilty looking ones left. And I'm like, oh, I give up. I'm like, it's probably going to be the fucking lamppost. It's probably going to be the lamp in the corner, grows legs and arms and runs around and fucking murders people. You know what I'm saying? It's the pet dog, the killer the whole time. It's going to be something crazy.
Or will they do the whole thing of like, oh, actually, it's me. I'm not really dead. I've been the killer all along type thing.
See, I was thinking that. But then the way some of these people die.
Yeah.
Like, and they really show you too, you know, so there's no ambiguity. You don't really know.
I mean, yeah, it'd be really hard for that guy who got like his arms and legs ripped off to be like, ah, surprise, I'm not really dead. Like,
either we blood his thumb comes out, ta-da, it was me all along. And then there would be people that you think is the killer, and then they have like a chase scene of just them getting chased by the killer. And then you're like, so it can't be you. because you're not putting on this performance for anyone other than us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't even be surprised if the director was the killer. Like, they turned to the camera himself. It's me.
It was Agatha all along. It's been Agatha all
along. And I killed Sparky too. I wouldn't even be fucking surprised at this rate, honest to God.
If Catherine Hahn, like, just Catherine Hahn has come to them, I'd be like, it was Agatha. Surprise, bitch.
Honestly, once you start watching it, you will get what I mean. And if anyone isn't watching it, I would suggest watch it for pure entertainment purposes. Because okay. Now I'm, yeah. But I think there's that American Horror Story, White Lotus, Nine Perfect Strangers, what else? Umbrella Academy. And something else I have on at the one time, and I can't do that and have a social life. I cannot.
No, that's true. I mean, I got so far with Umbrella Academy. I think I got to, like, I don't know. I just couldn't. It just wasn't really doing it for me. I mean, I might have watched like the first season, or maybe got towards the end, but I was like, oh, something's missing for me.
Yeah, it's not doing it for me at all. I'm watching it and I'm like, on paper, this is, you know, my strategy.
Me too. It's like with that, I've got all the puzzle pieces in front of me, but for some reason, they're not all fitting in. Like, they're not all kind of right. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. And I can't kind of get the whole thing together. So that's why I have to, like, stop.
And that's like, dead and buried. But let's get on to the absolute gist bit. Enough chatter chatter. And let's finally talk about what we have here. Why we even do this podcast in the first place, bitch.
Yes, I mean, I've been like apprehensive to do this. I don't know, and it sounds so stupid, but because it's like there's so much to say, it's like, oh, what do I say? You know what I mean? Because there's just so much. I feel like, how do I convey how much I love this movie, apart from being sat in front of the fucking poster of this movie? Like, I've also got a tattoo of it as well.
You got a tattoo, you got the poster, I've got a Ghostface figure behind me, and I have the Scream 4 DVD, like, fucking limited edition shit.
I got the phone I used when I was Casey Becker.
That's right. She needs to be resurrected. But, if anyone has not guessed what we're talking about yet, and you've loved Under a Rock, we are hitting you up with our Scream Samba. Yeah, I'm screaming, I'm running. And of course, that just means that throughout the whole month, we're going to go Scream 1, Scream 2, 3, Scream, and then Scream 4, ignoring the TV series because we do not fuck with them. And we actually
review
season 3 way at the start, remember, and that was hot garbage, mama. So
I will say with briefly on the Scream series, I mean, there is sometimes where, like, and it sounds up, I'll put on like the first episode of the first season because, like, I actually really enjoyed that episode, and I'm like, the rest of it I'm gonna leave because I know how shit it is.
The episode that I put on, and every now and
the Halloween day, one,
no, it's the one where they're in the bowling alley.
Oh yeah,
that one. And they're like, it's just like chasing with like them all, and that's the one I'll put on. I'm like, because that was the first time that there was actually any chase scenes. And to be fair, like, you know, our feelings, I think, were a bit hurt just with the whole thing existing and just started being like too MTV. But I mean, the second season is trash, but the first season is actually all right. It's a bit of a hit, like.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I quite like that scene of, like, Brooke in the garage where she's like, you think, oh, she's going to get it, but she doesn't.
Yeah, And then also with, what was the friend? And she was murdered at the top. That was, like, the first sort of big...
Oh, Bella. Her real name is Bella Thingy. She was
Bella Thorne, no.
Babysitter.
No, not Bella Thorne. She was the one.
Oh, that ran up. She ran up the.
She gets killed in like the second or third episode.
Is it like Jamie or something like that?
Something like that. Anyway, that's what I've. All those are little moments I like, but you know, it is not faithful to our franchise. It may have had Wes Craven's name on it, but you know, that was a stamp of approval for the first episode, I think, and anything else he wrote. But for anyone that doesn't know, and if you don't know, why are you listening? But please explain the plot of Scream to all the kids out there.
I mean, and there are some out there, because have you seen those videos on like YouTube where it's like it's like Gen Z like try to name these horror films, and like Scream comes up, and you're like, what? shut up. Like, and they're like, yeah. I've never seen it. I don't know what it's about. Isn't it got like so and so? You're like, are you insane? You're definitely
back to school, you go
cruising for a bruising. But
we're fully and bad teachers when Cameron Diaz is lying there not doing any work and she puts Scream on and she's lying there hungover. And then the kids are just sitting there watching Scream. That is us, GLT.
Yeah, and for anyone who doesn't know, because there are a few of you out there, you already know.
You already know.
Scream follows Sydney Prescott, played by Neve Campbell, and her friends as they are stalked by Ghostface, who's trying to fuck up Sydney and all of her friends and succeeds in fucking everyone up. And there's some great cameos. It's meta on meta on meta. It's just...
Period.
One of the best horror films of all time. I'm going to say it.
Yeah,
I mean, I didn't really explain it that well, but to be fair, like, it's
quite... I mean, it's even neat.
But it's also it's a simple like plot. Like the plot is that it's not like, you know, obviously we've got plot points and stuff like that happen, of course. But if you were to write the plot summary on paper, it's like three lines. It's not like it's
exactly. And also it's one of those ones where it's like kind of hard to explain it because we don't see it as just like a plot, you know, like how like
sure.
Someone goes, well, what's Scream about? I'd be like, it's this bomb ass film about a guy running around in a flappy costume, fucking people up and threatening them by horror movies in the phone, bitch. Eat it. Yeah, because that is the best meal that you'll have ever. If that's the meal you're eating, bitch, make that the last meal you ever eat.
And because we've got four and we've seen them like a gazillion times.
Yeah.
So to me now, it's like they're all one continuous like big story. It's one big huge story. Yeah. And there's plot points that affect every different movie and things like all like link and stuff. So it's like, to me, it's one big saga. So how do you explain one big huge
exactly franchise? And we'll try our very very best, everyone out there, to not jump around and talk about the other movies when we're reviewing the specific movie, because I can already see me being like, oh, but it was like that time that in Scream 3, and
then
Scream 4 was like this. No, we're talking about Scream 1996 today. We've earned it, we've worked for it, 2.5 years in the making, and we will probably have sweet fuck all to say because there's so many words in my brain, they might just not come out of my mouth.
No, to be fair, this is the longest list of notes I've ever made for a movie, and it makes perfect sense. Like, there's just so many things. But starting off, like, straight out the gate, anytime I see Dimension Films, oh, I get so fucking hyped. It is unreal. Oh, so I just know, I feel it deep in my pussy. And I'm like, ooh, it just, oh.
All my spirit moves me. Flooded. And it's the, anytime I see Dimension Films, it will always be Scream, whether it comes up and there's the phone ring or that like little noise, like that boom, you know, before like the Scream card comes up.
Yeah.
Any of it, I'm on it. You well, see that shit?
Seeing Dimension Films and that phone ring, to me, it's like, it's one of the most iconic scenes in the movie, and it's not even started yet. But it's like, just like... You're like, oh, it's about here to go down. Here we go.
Right, me and you sat there watching for the millionth time, and that happens, and I shit you not, I sit with a grin on my face. I'm like, here we fucking go. And what we can say is not even one of the most iconic opening of a horror movie. This is the best opening to a movie.
Yeah.
Period.
This opening sequence, the scene, is probably hands down one of the best scenes, not just in horror, like just in cinema in general. Like, it's just
ever.
So many levels. And the fact that, like, we have Drew Barrymore at the time, she was like, well, she's huge anyway, but at the time, she was fucking top dog. You know, she was massive, which she still is, but, like, you know, really at the height.
That was her peak then.
Her stardom was like, even though she'd been acting since she was like a kid, she was up there, you know? And the fact that she lobbied for this part and was like, no, because she was given the part of Sydney. She's like, nah, I don't want to do that. I want to be this chick that gets killed straight away. And that whole concept is just genius anyway. I mean, for that time, that wasn't being done. You have your throwaway characters that get killed off at the start that no one really knows about or cares about. Then you have Drew Barrymore, and the audience is like tricked into believing, oh, well, you know, Drew Barrymore's right, not going to die. Like, but then she's fucked the fuck
up. She has fucked the fuck up. And that's it. That completely set and paved the way for how we viewed horror movies.
Like, it changed the game for like slashers.
Things like Valentine and stuff came around, and all those horror movies where then they capitalized on getting your big star, which is Denise Richards, and fucking them up. And that sort of then that all snowballed from Scream. And it was the fact even that Wes Craven didn't even want to make the movie because Drew Barrymore didn't want to be Sydney anymore. And then she was like, trust me, killing me off in the start, nobody will see it.
Yeah,
comment. And I will tell you now, to be alive or to have been alive to watch that, because you know we view trailers differently, but even watching them, watching the trailer, we had known now, you know, the bitch's clothes haven't changed, you know, we're seeing her run about the same house, our brain would go, she's gonna die. Then they hadn't a clue, and I would give anything to experience that sweet, sweet nectar.
I mean, just imagine being like our age in like 96 and being like going to the cinema. I'm like, oh, we're going to watch this new movie. And it was so smart. Like they put it out at Christmas. They thought it was going to bomb. But they were like, well, no, it's all these other people that don't either not celebrate Christmas or don't celebrate it in like the traditional way that like made it explode. And it's just, just from the opening itself, it's just like genius and iconic. I even love like, and it's like right at the start, like this like really nice shots of like the exterior of the house, and it shows you like the shot is of where Casey eventually ends up hanging from that tree,
and they do it on purpose.
So they show you, oh, look how lovely this house is. It's so nice, and then
you're like, look how lovely the swing is. We're going to wrap that swing around her slaughtered body in about 10 minutes from now. And I mean, that just the whole phone call, you know, the whole game, the scene, the popcorn, even something small, the blue screen, you know, it's all like actually
impressive. And when she pulls the knife out the block and it goes sling. Oh, I love that noise. So it's so satisfying. I love it. We have watched this
maybe more than once, but like the way that knife comes out. And I remember when we went and seen this in cinema.
Yeah.
Remember the noises that we were hearing, which we'd never heard before. That experience in itself was fucking gold.
Exactly.
Now, I will say though, there was one thing, and I've always noticed this for ages, so I went and done a bit of research on why the mask changes in the first scene. Like it changes like 3 times.
Yeah.
It's because they had a mask. And then, what is it, like a weekend of filming, then they had to change it. So that's, they were shooting that scene. So that's why sometimes the mask looks like weirdly like rounded, you know. That's why when the principal gets murdered, the mask looks like that because they shot his stuff like first.
Yeah.
And then they were doing the other stuff. And do you know what? That'll be the only complaint that comes out of me, and it's not a complaint. And it's like Halloween H2O. When I see a mask switch, I'm like... Yeah. But they get their shit together, you know, the next time it come around, they're like, the mask will be the same.
Well, they were having like issues with the mask, like the network was like, oh, the mask isn't scary enough. And they tried like loads of masks out until they got this mask. But I'm so glad they did. But I think I either read this or it was on. Did you watch that like Scream reunion, like that Zoom that they all did?
It was like a
charity Zoom. I think I got it from this, and I think one of the cast members was telling a story. It might have been like Skeet Ulrich or someone else, a story about how the guy that played Steve, he either auditioned for the role of Billy, or he had the role of Billy like as a filler before Skeet got cast. Something like it was either he got cast as Billy or he like was in, it was like down to him and Skeet. I think it was something like that, where it was, they were the two up for the role, but then he got cast as like Steve instead.
And then like you went from nearly being Billy Loomis, one of the most iconic killers ever, to being Steve. But
he is in an iconic scene. So, I mean,
at the end of the day, that is one of the most iconic scenes, which even Well, today I know obviously how it works, the logistics, but I used to always be like, how the fuck did Gooseface slot him open and we can't see him? You know what I'm talking about? I used to watch him be like this, always looking and you can't see. And I'm like, Casey, obviously he's behind the chair. You yeah. just watched him get slot. And she's like, and he's like, what door am I at? And she's like, I don't know. But she just got fucking good at it.
Well, I think what I got from it was, because yeah, that is, I mean, I would love to have been able to see Ghostface like actually do, like kill Steve. However, I think because we actually hadn't seen Ghostface yet, we'd only heard him on the phone. I think if we had seen him in that moment, the effect of him popping out when he does,
yeah,
it wouldn't have had the same effect. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just a case of an editing standpoint, and they wanted to make like, where's the moment it's going to make the best impact. I don't think us seeing a silhouette of Ghostface already just outside killing Steve, I don't think that would have made the same impact. So I think that
because the moment when she comes to the house and, you know, and Ghostface turns around, that in itself, you know, that's iconic. And that had to be the moment. I feel like we're going to say the word iconic probably about 200 to 2000 times today. Iconic, the moment, that's all you'll hear coming out of our lips, bitch.
Genius. So good.
Masterpiece. Eat it, shit it, put it in a blender, eat it again. But no, like, I even was looking up Empire Magazine, done something that was like best openings like of all time. I think Scream was number two. And when I see stuff like that, you know, like a film like that just getting its praise, I'm like, ooh, baby.
Out of all of them, I think this is definitely the one that gets the most like critical acclaim, which it should, because it was like no other. And it's so, one of the things I love about this film and the franchise is how meta it is. And like for the time, it just wasn't done. You didn't really reference like other movies and like, or how to make movies and rules of movies. And it just made it all so like delicious. And it gave us an extra level on top of just a general generic slasher movie, which it could have potentially have been, but they added so much good stuff to kind of, you know, really make their standpoint on
absolutely horror. And they didn't think it was going to be as successful when they were making the movie. They didn't think it was going to be that successful when they released it. As you said, they released it around Christmas because they didn't think it was going to be successful, and look what it's turned into. I will say though, if you're listening to this and you're one of the people that think a scary movie first and not Scream, my pet hate in life, and I've experienced a few, and there were people listening who have done the same, and like we're watching, they go and they laugh, oh, I can't take it seriously because all I can think about is Scary Movie. That you may as well have just called my mom a slut to my face. I'm horrified by that. And they're like, and they laugh and like, oh, I can't take it seriously. Well, then leave the building, get out of my face.
It's probably like the highest form of disrespect. Like when someone said that to me, I'm like, how homophobic do you want to be today? Because that is like next level, like
misogynistic, racist, anything under the sun, you name it, you are it for even saying those things. I'm sorry, it's like sacrilegious. Beating up an old woman and robbing the bitch is more acceptable than saying stuff like that, and I want to make that clear. So if you're listening to this and you're, you know, oh, that's what happened in Scary Movie, evacuate the premises.
Yeah, or we're not the podcast for you, because that's not our standpoint.
This is not what we stand for. Our religion is Sidney Prescott. That is my religion. And Gail, my religion is just Gail and Sidney. That is my gospel.
Sidney Prescott is my Lord and Savior. Like, so don't even try it.
This is a Sidney Prescott appreciation post 24/7.
Oh, 100%. And one of the other things I really love and adore about this movie is the fact they got, they have Roger Jackson, who does the voice of Ghostface, like sat in another room, actually on the phone with everyone that he calls. Like they're actually on the phone. The cast never got to see him because like it added to that level of like intensity. I think it's just so cool. And the fact as well that they originally had Roger Jackson in as just to do the voice, and they were going to recast him like at a later point. He was just there like to fill in some shoes and just do the voice.
Yeah.
But they felt like he just absolutely brought it, which he does. And he's just, that voice to me is
he
like...
Is, He is just next as level. Like... He is just as important as Sydney. In fact, you know, you could take Sydney and whatever out of it, which could very happen, you know, very well happen one day. But I am sorry, it is not Scream unless I hear that voice. And that's what was wrong with the TV series. They didn't even, they kind of attempted with some sort of weird voice. And I was like, this isn't working. Roger Jackson's menacing, like rumbly, weirdly sexy, but evil voice.
It's like really weirdly sexy.
It's weirdly sexy. It's all about like, I just want to see what your insides look like. I'm like, take, ask your girlfriend, drink first. Ew.
I mean, I can just show you a picture that I...
I'll be your sock puppet any day of the week, bitch, for that voice. I'm telling you, you know, like he is just as iconic, and
he's so good at playing him, like he's so good at the whole cat and mouse game, and that's one thing that Ghostface is the Killer does really, really well at the whole like playing with the characters before he actually kills them, and it's just so like delicious to watch them, like him just toying with them, knowing the fact that he could have walked in a room and like fucked everyone up like with like no issues, but the fact he takes his time and enjoys playing with his victims really works.
Yeah, that's it. And you don't really see that anymore. Like, you know, we have our iconic serial killers, but I think what really, you know, puts Ghostface out from the pack is that, you know, in the 80s, the surge of like, you know, making what was scary then somewhat comedic, like with Leatherface and stuff. Yeah. You have these really villainous characters physically, or they've had this like really like fucked up backstory, or you know, that's the sort of plethora we have. Jason, Freddy, Chucky, Michael, like you name it.
They've been burned or they've been drowned. Yeah,
there's
or like
some either like drastic story that's happened to them, or they're like a fucking melted pedophile, or you know, they're a mute that can't be killed. And here's Ghostface, which is a man who sprints in a mask and a fucking cape, like a big robe. And the fact that, like, I think my favorite part is like you can swing a door and you'll knock into the ground, you'll trip and fall over shit. And I think that's what makes him even more iconic, because he's like even like desperate. You could see Michael Myers walking towards you, terrifying, but Ghostface is actually legging it. He is sprinting full pedal to come get your ass. And that to me is scarier, because he's like, he's dying to fuck you up, you know?
Yeah, and it sort of like weirdly makes Ghostface like really human, because you've got the likes of like Freddy and Michael and Jason, who almost seem to be like these other beings that
like
just
supernatural
can't...
entities, basically.
Yeah, that just can't seem to like die. Whereas Ghostface, you know, it's, you know, like I say, it's, he's erratic, he's fast, he's slippery. He'll like, you can push a door in his face and he'll like fall down the stairs. It's so dramatic and over the top, but I love it. But yeah, even though like he's made to be like dehumanized with the mask and whatever and switching out the voice, him being like having flaws by being like knocked out or whatever, it does make him a lot more scary, because you feel like, oh, there's actually someone behind there. Like, there's someone behind me now.
And I was just going to say, there's someone behind you. He's behind you. Where?
Just see his little tail wiggling.
And I think that's why he's just absolutely brilliant. And he is, to me, obviously, we're Scream and Halloween stands here. You know, Michael Myers is my king, and Ghostface is yours. And Ghostface is, you know, he's bringing home the silver for me, but I'm just obsessed with them. I mean, any film that comes on, and that's what I'm saying, even with like the TV series, even something as simple as the mask, like not being the same, you really lose that essence, because he is iconic. And the truth is, you know, the time that we grew up on, and many people here, we're of an era that when it came to Halloween, 51% of the children were dressed as Ghostface, and that's ours. You know, everyone's seen it, everyone knew it, you know who he is. He's pop culture. He is pop culture. Everyone knows about the opening scene. Everyone knows who he is, and everyone knows at least like Courtney Cox being, you know, it is pure pop culture. And that's why you cannot deny the huge, unbelievable influence that it has and that it had over the slasher genre. So, you know, late 90s, The Faculty, Cherry Falls, all that. It's all because of Scream, and slasher movies are now a really beloved thing that doesn't have to be a supernatural entity, you know, trying to be murdered off 9 films in a row. And it's because of Scream, and we cannot deny it's superiority. I don't think
you're adding like a D in there. Superiority.
Superior. Mm-hmm. Sorority rule. Come on, English lesson.
No, and what annoys me is that, you know, when you ever see like these bullshit lists that are like, oh, top 10 horror movie killers, and like Ghostface has never paid his dues, and he's always
like ninth.
Yeah, and I'm like, he's like what top tier, one of the best killers. I mean, yeah. I'm gonna put it out there, the best. But we're both Halloween and Scream stands, but obviously one of us leans towards the other one, which is
it's an even balanced diet.
It's like Scream to you is your silver, Halloween to my silver. But it's so close, but like one just like gets the other one more. But I get hella pissed when I see like Ghostface like number 9, and then I see like fucking Jigsaw's like number 3 or 2, and you're like, I'm sorry, what?
And I'm like, Jigsaw's not even the fucking killer, bitch. And like, Jigsaw's he's the fucking dummy. He's the doll.
Yeah, like Samara from The Ring is always on there. You're like, so this long haired bitch is like above Ghostface. Yeah,
or okay. And they'd be like, you know, each to their own, but I am not a Hellraiser fan. There's not one movie that I like. Yeah. I've seen like 4 of them and counting, and I can't bring myself to watch anymore because there's like 12. Yeah. And I'm thinking, hold on, you've put Pinhead above Ghostface.
Yeah.
He really, critically, has only had one bad film. And the other 3 have been absolute clinkers. And he's over here riding 9th. And you've got like Hellraiser, and you've got The Nun, fucking 2 and 3. And I'm like, no. He is actually a person that every single film he comes back for, it's because there's a new fucker dying to kill Sidney Prescott. So they put on that cape and they go a scooting. I mean, that's much better than I was exploded and Satan stitched me back together again and I came back. Shut up. You know?
Yeah, no. So let's move on to the second scene in the movie, which... No, but before we get that, you know, we actually need to talk about Casey's actual death, because that is chef's kiss. The whole situation with you know, she really fights for it, and you know, he gets her just in time, stabs her right in the chest, just as her parents arrive, and you think she's gonna make it. Like, she's got plenty of time to get. She really has. She's got all the tools to make it out of this. She really has. But
yeah,
Ghostface is just too quick for her, and also the fact. There's Stu and Billy are there, right? I've read so many lists that have been like, who kills who? I feel like they've got to be both there, because
so there was one that I seen recently, and they said that it was Stu that killed Casey. I think they're both
But I feel like they're both there though, right? I feel like,
because it was basically this thing that I read. It was like, here's a theory that Stu and Billy were in a gay relationship. And I was like, okay, that's click. That's a list I want to see.
I mean, it's also something that I could believe as well.
I know, 100%. And I think that's even why Scary Movie started played up a little bit, because it's very homoerotic. But it was that, because obviously Casey broke up with, what am I talking about?
Stu.
So that's why Stu chose her.
Yeah,
to be like sort of victim, and then that's sort of why they predominantly sort of chase the females, as if they're like killing off the girls so that the 2 boys can fuck, basically, is what they were saying. But I think they were both there, but it was like Stu was the one that killed her.
I believe that, but I think for the first initial one, I think definitely both there, so she didn't have a chance. And then you know, when she's like being cut up and she's still like she's still got the phone in her hand,
the road's being crossed, and that's why she's it's actually really sad.
It is really, really sad. And then when like her mum picks up the phone and she can hear her like wheezing, and then she's just getting like fucked up on the phone, and her mum can hear it. And then you go outside, and this probably has to be one of like the most iconic thing. And it's only flashes for like 3 seconds. The flash of Casey Becker even as a child, it just, that vision stuck in my brain. And I
haunted my brain.
It's, yeah, it's like an imprint. And I will, it's always part of my DNA. Be able to, yeah, no, like that, her face, that shot of her swinging will always flash in my mind. And I think that is also one of the like iconic scenes of the movie as well.
It's how twisted it is. People forget how dark Scream actually is, because for gays, especially, for some weird reason, gays love Scream. We just think it's just the best thing since sliced bread, because it is. But like, it's, because we enjoy it so much, you actually forget how dark it really is. You know, it can be comedic, it can be a bit silly, a bit playful, but that opening scene is horrific when you think about it. You know, the conversation that happens, the game that's being played, how she's actually killed, the phone, how she just about misses her parents by the car, and her voice, and then how her, you know, the parents and the music, and like they're screaming, it's all, and then they find her hanging. I mean, it's all horrific. But to us, we're like,
work bitch.
You're dramatic, like open it, it's so dramatic, and we're like, this is so fierce.
And I feel like Ghostface as well has got a thing for like literally spilling guts.
Because
obviously he does that to Steve, and then does it to Casey, and then it's brought back in. Well, they mention it with the principal, like they mention like, oh, like he's guts, you know, everywhere, and then they bring it back for Olivia in 4, right? They don't do that again.
Yeah, that's right.
But like they have this like thing about like just like splitting open people, are like having all the guts out for the world to see. And I think that's kind of interesting, like, oh, what's the thing with all like the guts everywhere?
It's like they don't really, he's not a very like stab you once and sort of run out sort of guy. It's like he won't stab you once, he will fuck you up over and over and over and over until your skin actually cannot, it's been pierced that much that your organs fall out of it. And I'm like, that is how, you know, that's so twisted. And if you didn't watch horror movies, that must be like crazy. I mean, to us, we be living, we just think that is the ooh, the ah, and the sensation. But if you were not a horror fan, surely that scene is like, you're like, what the fuck, you know?
Yeah, sure. That's surely a good scene to like enlighten you to, you know, the church of horror movies. Like, it's surely that's enough to make you want to believe.
Yeah, but, exactly.
Then we get the next scene, and even the next scene, the music, the score of this movie is just, again, chef's kiss. Like, it's just, I would quite happy listen to like the Scream score just like, you know, bopping around. Like, it's so good.
When I'm like doing the washing, going out for a walk, just have like Scream's like score just playing in my ears, you know?
It's so good. And then obviously we get the cameo from Linda Blair, iconic, like, great, iconic, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
And then you see, Courtney Cox in all of her glory in that lime green suit. And you just, just absolute queen. And again, icon of this movie. Like, she's just so good in it. And at the time, she was playing Monica. So she's just big contrast of characters and how she plays the characters, and just completely worlds apart. And she does such a good job at like making sure that this isn't like, Gail Weathers is nothing like Monica Geller, and that's the whole point. I read that she was lobbying to play Gail for like, she was like working her ass off to get that, like,
oh really,
part. Yeah, it wasn't like just offered to her, she was like, she was working for that part. She was like, I want this is mine.
That is mad, like when you think about it, because obviously with the success of Friends, you know, they didn't think, which is crazy because they all said they didn't think it would be that big. So why was Courtney Cox being like, I want to be in this slasher film? Like, and what I love now is you can see why. It's like, she's not one of those people that are in it and where, you know, like being in Scream 4, it was like, oh, if I must her being in this new Scream. Oh no, she's like, she's obsessed with
she's
Scream.
Keen.
And
I
love, you know what I mean? Like, I love that she loves it and she loves the Scream fans. And I'm like, see, that's what we want. You've got Monica, you've got the Friends fan, but you are a Scream bitch too. I mean, she would put up videos of her, you know, with a Scream 3 bangs, you know, the like Halloween prank. And I love for the fact that she is obsessed with Scream just as much as we are. She's fucking iconic.
If I'm, yeah, being really honest, when I see Courtney Cox, I don't see Monica Geller. I see Gail Weathers. And it is what it is. I mean, she's so good, and like the lines are so punchy, and it's even sort of like the little things that I love, and she is like wickedly funny in this. She's just, yeah. She's just so good.
Gail Weathers is a final girl just as much as Sydney, but in a way where she's the one that's like the bitch version.
Yeah.
So you fucking love her because obviously we love for this bitch, but she is the bitch that like you kind of want to see get punched. But you never want to see, like she deserves each slap. She deserves everything happens because that's the way she is. But to ever witness Gail Weathers die, I actually think I will burst into tears. Probably more than if it was Sydney Prescott. No, I take that back.
But yeah, I mean, even everything about us, like the fashions, like that Gail Weathers, her fashion story from like, and going from like 1, 2, 3, 4 is just something else. Like every single outfit she wears is just thebomb.com. I'm like, I want to wear that. I want to wear that. I want to wear that. I want to wear all of it.
It's the suits for me. They're like all colored suit. The green one, like the lime one she wears in this, even in the new Scream, there was photos taken and she's on this like red suit.
Power suit. And, like, that black power suit in number 2. I mean, she posted...
The yellow one and 3 when she has the red... I mean, she is a fashion icon. The one-liner she comes out with, move your fat tub of lard ass now!
I love it's not her, but she's in the scene. It's I'll send you a copy. Bam, bitch went down.
I think that's what makes Scream again just such a masterpiece. Is it's female characters.
Mm-hmm.
They're not like sexual objects. Every single one of them is different. They have a different flavor, and they're like they've got so much character.
And they're so dynamic. They're not
so dynamic.
The way that like Kevin Williamson wrote. Like the women in this, especially, it's like layers. They're not just even though Tatum is supposed to be like this, like, well, they try and sexualize it, but I think Rose McGowan. Potentially Rose McGowan may at the time like played it more down. I think Tatum originally was supposed to be like this, you know, hypersexualized, but then it gives us so many layers, and she isn't just this hypersexualized big tittered blonde. She's a lot more than that, and it's the same with all of his female characters. There's a lot more to them.
Yeah, and that's a lot more. And this is even more reason again why it's a masterpiece. Is my problem, I think, with a lot of slasher movies is they're not even a lot of build up. I saw a lot of nothing happens, and then someone's just killed. There's no chasing. All the characters go down like a sack of shit.
Yeah.
They're like walking through the woods and they just turn around and heads cut off while with Scream. It was like, oh no, we're not just going to kill Tatum. She's going to have this fight scene where she's like lobbing bottles, swinging fucking freezer doors, and like, you know, she's fighting for it. Gail Weathers fighting for it. Casey fighting for it. They don't just, you know, kill and they're done. No time ever in Scream. Everyone has a moment to fight for themselves, and that's what I fucking love. It's not about the kills, it's about the suspense, the chains, the intensity. That is the flavor of fucking life. And then the kills are a bonus when he's over there, you know, taking chunks out of bitches. That's what we want.
I mean, the Scream films, they do a really good job at edging the fuck out of the audience and being like, and they just, everyone gets their own sort of like cat and mouse chase scene. You know, Sydney gets one in her house, which is just great again. Although I will say that there is the moment where there's like Ghostface and Sydney like rolling around on the floor is a little bit, I think it's just because of the time. It's a little bit soapy and a bit like...
Because she's flailing around and she's and desperately not trying to show her face because she's the stunt double. And, you know, she's like flicking her head and it lingers on them sort of rolling about. And, you know, very that though. But as you said, I think it's just probably a bit of the time. Because once you just take that little hiccup, you know, and we're honest girls, there are hiccups in Scream, but again, it's the first Scream, you know, it's the first like it of the time. So there are little hiccups here and there.
What I want to know is that whole door thing, you know, where she puts like the closet door against her bedroom door.
How did that work?
Like, yeah, I was like, was this a thing in the 90s where like, did everyone have this? Like, was it a thing, or did they just make it up just so they could have this be a feature in Scream? Or it just seemed very natural, and like this was a thing that everyone does. Like, you put your door. It's like the doorknobs they lock, so you can't actually move the door. But it didn't actually make any sense.
This just to really trouble my brain. Obviously, forever I was like, surely you can just like. But I don't know, push the door open. I'm sorry, it just doesn't look logistically like it works. And then I don't know where I was, and I went somewhere, and one door open, and I tried to come through one, and it like went boom, and it jammed itself.
Yeah.
Because whatever the way the other door was, it like just like, and you, I mean, you couldn't get through. And I went,
Scream.
It's the Scream door. I was like, it works. It's just whatever way it's like, wherever that door is, when that one pushes, something jams, and just like neither of them then move. You move the other one, that one then will move.
But was that an actual thing? Did that happen in homes across America? Or did they just write it in randomly? Because it does feel like, oh, this is something that happens in every single home. You can just do this whenever you want to help, you know, not get killed by a fucking killer.
Well, I mean, Scream makes up its own sort of rules, doesn't it? So it's like, I don't think that's a thing, but I'm trying to make it out like it was a thing. Like how a voice changer, you know, how we just, you know, suspension of disbelief, we just believe that there's a voice changer that can have big sexy Roger Jackson's voice, when really at the end like, this is how you're gonna die, like they use it, it's awful, you know what I mean? It's like, that's not that, but we're just like, okay, well, we'll let you have your moment.
Did they actually make some of those after that, after the movie, for, like, to hype up, like, for publicity? Did they make a bunch of those to like sell?
Wait, is this like a real thing, or are you actually asking me?
No, I'm asking. I wonder if at the time, maybe for like more the second one, if they made a bunch, if they actually produced, you know, is that like voice changers, you know, like hype up the movie and be like, oh, build it all up. Did that actually happen? I feel like it did, but I don't know.
But I feel like it would be like such a sensitive time, because I remember there was some that went around killing his friends and says it was because of Scream. So I'd imagine they're a bit more sensitive, so probably weren't going to rush to make voice changers.
Yeah.
It'd be, you know, people look as if they're encouraging people to sort of carry out what sort of went on in the film.
But speaking of murders inspired by Scream, there was two guys, I think only a couple of years ago, two like high school guys, they wanted to kill one of their friends who was a girl, and they planned it out like they were inspired by Scream, like they wanted to like film it. They were like obsessed with it. So they did this whole thing where they went round to her, like she was house sitting for her family, like her family were out, and they went over to hang out. They left. And then when they left, they then like put on masks and they snuck back into the basement because they cracked open a window, snuck in the basement, like shut off all like the lights and like was making noises to like scare her and stuff. And then they ended up just fucking killing her.
Did they kill her? That's not, because I think there was another one as well. I think there was that one, there was other ones. So like, I remember seeing loads of stuff about Scream being problematic at the time, because it was giving the illusion to people that all you can do is throw on an outfit and put on a mask, you know?
Yeah.
Here was a new killer, that it's not a supernatural beast. Here's someone's like, no, you can do it if you're, you know, fucked up in the head enough, which billions do were. So you could see maybe why people being a serial killer might look to Scream, because it's fucking bomb. Yeah. If you're going to do it, do it fucking right.
Do it fucking right. Now, one, I always think as well, Tatum's outfits are always like bang on point as well.
Oh, I mean,
that crop top and red trouser combo is just insane.
So, do you know that look is inspired as a nod to Johnny Depp's look in A Nightmare on Elm Street?
Well, do you know what? There's quite a few connections, because the reason why they cast Ski as well is because he had like a Johnny Depp look from him, and Johnny Depp was obviously in Night Night as well. So there's definitely like he wears like to, you know, infuse some little like bits.
And obviously, just the cameo. Craven himself has,
just the cameo. Yeah, bless him.
Yeah. And the, I know, bless him, R.I.P. And the little sweater. So he like, he won. If you didn't know that he directed A Nightmare on Elm Street, he's going to tell you. You know what I mean? He wants everybody to know that he created Freddy Krueger. But Freddy Krueger is nothing compared to Ghostface, darling.
No, it's not. Do you know what I never understood? It's why Tatum has two beds in her bedroom. Two single beds and not one double bed. I've never noticed
that before. See, that's a very you thing to notice. You definitely were like, why does she have two beds? And I know that's been bothering you for years.
It's just weird to me that she has two of the exact same bed in her room. Like, she spends most of her time in there. So why is there two of the exact same bed, not one big bed?
Because she doesn't have a sister. No. It's just her and Dewey. So why does she have two beds? Very good point. And actually, on the point of Dewey, right, is such an underappreciated character. There is very little male characters.
And he's so hot.
See, I don't think he is.
See, I think because he's fucking fresh. I think when he's in his like police officer sheriff outfit, I think he's really sexy.
I think he's really sexy in 3 and 4. Especially 4, because he's like a bit more of a daddy, a bit more experienced, not as silly and goofy. Oh, I love him.
The shot of him like licking the ice cream is really sexy. He's got the little pink ice cream and he's there and like licking his ice cream.
The whole point of that, the whole point of that is he's speaking then to the deputy who stood there having a cigarette and Dewey's having the ice cream. And the whole point was to really have that contrast of here's a man and here's Dewey like stood here with his little pink ice cream. They really wanted everyone to be like, oh, bless his cotton socks, you know? And when he like throws down the cigarette, like, I'm sure Dewey, like, does Dewey throw that ice cream down then? Or did I make
he carries on eating it.
I made that up. What film am I thinking of? How dare I?
I know, how very fucking dare you.
How fucking dare you. Wasn't it that the plan was to kill Dewey off, and then like he was dead, and then they were like at the end, no, let's do a shot actually of him, you know, coming in through the, going into the ambulance, because they realized they really liked him. So we could have been this close to losing him, and I'm feared we'll lose him in the new one. I'm scared for him.
I mean, the new one has got the potential to kill off all the original players just to kind of jumpstart this new franchise they want to do. But I don't know how that'll go down. But with you. I'm more fearful that Gale gets killed than I am Dewey.
Because it was like they said, you know, they're honoring Wes Craven and they're huge Scream fans and... But they want to basically like take the franchise in a new direction. I'm like, one part of me thinks if you're such huge Scream fans, you know that killing all three of them off is like a huge no-no. But
it's a surefire way to piss people off.
But it's bold, and that's the original Scream. If anything, it was bold, and I think the same thing could happen. Like, I'm nervous talking about it. I'm nervous.
Yeah, I'm nervous. What do you think of I think it's so cheesy of those two girls in the bathroom having their little like conversation like that. I heard
a bubble about boyfriend Billy. It's just like no one is really having those conversations. No one is like, you know, Sydney's mom got murdered and raped the year before, and they're just like, and they're calling her a slut, calling like Sydney a piece of shit. I hope your whole family die. It was like, bitch, no one is that mean, sure.
Yeah, saying she's the killer because she can't handle the fact that mom's just died. I'm like, how many people just go on like a killing spree a year later after like their loved one has died? I don't think that's very common.
Nah. And also, kind of on the topic with sort of Maureen Prescott's murder. So was she raped? Because they say raped and murdered. So did Billy and Stu rape her as well?
Yeah, but also... Well,
that's fucked up.
In this movie, yes. However, in 3 with Roman, doesn't he... Is he just manipulating them two? Or did he kill Maureen?
He...
Because this is like the weird, like, confusing, like, so did he...
This is where Scream 3 starts to fuck it all up.
Yeah.
You just shouldn't have come up here with that bullshit, because now it makes you rethink the first one. And sometimes I like to pretend that Scream 3, like, that sort of twist isn't a thing. You know, I kind of like, oh, no, Billy and Stu done it, you know?
Yeah, no, in my heart of hearts, I feel like Roman was just, like, the facilitator and was like... Like, you should do, and like, which, you know, like, egging them on, like, oh, you should like do this. It's like, feels really good, like, to kill someone, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Go over and knife. Because,
like, if I start getting to like the nitty gritty of it all, I feel like, so wait, did the boys actually do that? Or like, were they just taking credit for it? It doesn't make any sort of like actual sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where sometimes I think even the, you know, Wes Craven himself, sort of the fourth one. It's not really mentioned. No one really mentions it, because it's just better when it's Billy and Stu. Like, Billy and Stu being the killer. When you find out the reveal, you know, Billy's also involved. I think Stu's obvious. It makes you look back at scenes, you know, with the two of them and Randy. You know, the two of them were Randy in the video store.
Oh, it makes
you watch that, like, in a completely different light. And it makes you see, you know, that final... scene with them in the kitchen where suddenly just like umps it up, like their motive, that final act of them in the kitchen is fucking 10 out of 10. That is some real shit. Just another level. That just Scream's already over here doing it, and that is like another level. That is some fucking 10 out of 10 shit right there.
No, it really is. But going back slightly, those like party people kind of get on my nerves a little bit as well, because they're a bit too like overacting when they're amongst the cast of like Jamie Kennedy and Matthew Lillard, who are just, you know, doing their own little thing and being like, you know, good actors. When you put like these other like clowns in the scene, like in, you know, in the whole party scene, it just sort of feels like, oh, there's a mismatch of like talent here. You know what I mean? It's very clear who's the talent and who's like the extras.
Yeah. But, and also, what sort of party, okay, and I'll say, not even a fucking party that we would go to, where everyone is sitting down to watch Halloween. Like, bitch, you know, I would love that, but I'm sorry, the parties that I go to are not fun. If everyone's like, let's all put on Halloween, no! I'm paralytic and pumping tunes, like, you know what I'm saying? And they're like, yeah, let's discuss what horror movie we're going to watch. I was like, and I know they're setting it up, you know, of course, that's what I mean. The rules that exist in Scream are rules that actually exist in reality, because that just doesn't happen. I'm sorry. And if it does, invite me, but I will pleasantly decline.
I need you to tell me, I need you to tell me where the fuck Tatum thought she was going when she tried to climb through that giant ass cat flap, which is, I've seen, you know, cat flaps are tiny little square things to fit a cat. This little like doggy door, whatever, was like obviously human size for a reason. But how she thought she was, I mean, she was fighting, bless her, but like the truck, that was a choice to go, do you know what? I'm gonna try and dive right through to, like, through the doggy door, like
fucking all.
And the thing is as well, when you watch it, she can fit through the whole thing.
She can fit.
She's
just choosing not to.
Yeah, so she's choosing to get stuck, but she could've...
It's like, oh, my tits can't get me through. She's like holding on to the side. There's plenty of room. I could fit through there with you, bitch.
Because when
you're
she's
being extra.
When she's going up, like, miraculously, like, more of her body is on the outside of the door. Like, it's like, but you got stuck going in, but then, like, the more, as it was going up, you'd think gravity would, like, pull her down and she would just fall out of it.
And to be fair, there's a couple of moments of editing of continuity that, obviously, when you see it as religiously as we are, for example, when Billy is being stabbed, Ghostface is in the background wiping his knife about 8 times. And every time you come back, he's wiping the knife and you can see wipe, wipe, wipe. And then he does it again. I'm like, the continuity is shaky, mom. What?
It, yeah. You
know, riggedy boots.
But I have to like excuse all that sort of stuff. And it's like, you know, when Tatum actually like gets, I don't know how you describe it, death. She gets like head squished by.
Yeah, gets squashed.
Yeah. But it's when you can see, and it's because of the time, like the hot, like that was like a rubber doll. You could just tell, like it wasn't, obviously it wasn't going to be her, but you could just tell like the special effects. It was just like a doll's head being like,
oh yeah, just being like squashed. But that said, it's like in itself, Tatum's death scene is, I don't want to use the word iconic again, but iconic will be used. It's infamous for, you know, it is infamous. The whole like garage scene, the cat flap, everyone knows it. And in what sort of fucking house does no one hear the whole fucking, you know, all the electricity and shit, the struggle, and B, why is there no one coming near here if this is where the beers are? So, you know,
yeah,
here's and where the like beers this... are, but no one's ever going to come in.
And it seems like a really lively party where you'd think someone would be walking around. That's like, it's not as if she's at the back of the house. It's like the garage, you know? So it's a little strange. But like you said, that whole scene and her death is completely iconic. She's got so many good, like little one-liners sprinkled throughout the whole film. And she's so good until she dies. Like she's just so good from top to bottom. And then that whole scene where she's pretending like, can I be the helpless victim?
Yeah. She's like,
I want to make the sequel.
Please don't kill me, Mr. Ghostface. I want to be in the sequel. She's like, cut it, Casper. That's a wrap.
Yeah, cut it, Casper. That's a wrap.
What I was going to say, what would be your favorite death scene, aside obviously from Casey's? But the thing is there's not really actually, well, there are death scenes, but I think Tatum's is obviously the most iconic, I think, outside of, you know, the opening, and the rest are just sort of like sort of general stabbings. It's more like the sort of questions you ask is, what's your favorite chase scene? You know, you know what I'm saying? Like, what's your favorite chase scene? That's the important question to ask.
Yeah, I mean, it's not in this movie. What do you mean, my favorite chase scene? My favorite chase scene of this movie?
Oh, from this movie. Absolutely. What would be your favorite chase scene?
I
little chase moment.
It's a really hard one because it's like two, but in the sort of like in the same scene. It's like it's a stretch scene of when Sydney is on the outside of the party. The party's like she's figured it. Everything's like she's running from Ghostface, and it's her running through the house, and she jumps out of the window onto the boat, and that's how she sees Tatum. But then from that point, when because it carries on from there, the whole thing in the car, where she's like going through the back of the truck, that whole, to me, it's like one long continuous scene. So for me, that's my, in this one, my favorite chase scene. It's just, Sydney is just like so good at being chased. She knows how to deliver a chase scene. She, like Neve Campbell, like bravo, you know exactly how to get chased and like amp it up. You're so good. And her, like even from like the little blood in her hair is so good, and like her outfit she's wearing is just so, everything's so right.
Nobody can get chased like Sydney Prescott. Mm-mm. Nobody can fuck a bitch up like Sydney Prescott. Nobody, like, one of the most iconic things is when Ghostface has chased her and she just slams the door on him and sends him to the floor. I fucking love her. She's an icon. She's the moment. You do not fuck with Sydney Prescott. You can chase her. She'll run faster. She'll outsmart you. We haven't even spoke about her yet. There's just too many words.
I mean, she's that bitch. She's that bitch. She's that bitch. She's that bitch. Don't you wish you could be this bitch?
Oh, I'm that bitch. I'm that bitch. I'm that bitch. That's the way it is. Don't you wish you could be that rich? But you ain't that bitch. It's unanimous. And she's like, she's got the vulnerability that obviously what's happened to her mom. She's really likable. Yeah. She's like a bit more tame, but not like one of those annoying mopey final girls. It's like her mom was raped and murdered, and it's nearly her anniversary. She's every reason to be like this, you know. Then
she's allowed to be like, still, she's in the grieving process, and everyone's like, it's been a year, get over it. It's like, you try having your mom or parent or whoever die in the most horrific way, and then see how you are a year later being like, oh, get over it yourself.
Exactly. And that's it. So you really understand why she is the way she is. And then how it follows on, like, you understand where the bitch is losing her mind. Like, if I was Sydney Prescott, all of her friends, loved ones are dead. They've all been murdered. And it's come up the fifth film. I'd call it a day. I'm like, or move to Bahamas or change my name. I'd be like, I couldn't do it.
I would do a fucking Claire Rivers from Final Station 2, where she's like, I'm going to lock myself in a padded cell so no one can get me. That's what I would do. But to me, like, Sydney Prescott is the ultimate final girl. To me, she is like the final girl of all final girls. I think, like, and you might would probably disagree, but I do feel like she does have the edge on Laurie Strode, because it's more like, it's more material to go off. She's had more movies of her being, you know, being Sydney Prescott. I just think anytime I hear the word final girl, Sydney is the first one, because she's done it four times. She's done the shit four times. She's the ultimate final girl, you know? Like,
yeah, and I think Laurie's the first, like, the OG, not the, the OG, but the OG final girl. And Sydney is the, like, sort of, the time she came around, she was the young, fresh final girl. She's the, like, the fighter, you know, she's the sprinter, the kicker. While Laurie was always, you know, we just seen her be vulnerable, and now she's,
there are a lot of, like, weird, like, whimpers from Laurie's show in the first one, where she's
but Sydney is just like that bitch, and I think, you know, Laurie will always be, of course, number one to me, but her transition's different. It's like they're two gorgeous flavors, but different flavors at the same time. Yeah, like two different types of final girls. One is like fighter, young, kicking ass, and the other is now an old lady who is like mentally disturbed. You know what I'm saying? So they're like two different flavors of final girls.
It's like one.
I actually couldn't choose.
It's like one's a dairy milk and one's like a caramel. Like they're on par, but like this, like each one has different things. But for me, Sydney will always, she just is like ultimate final girl. And again, her outfits, she looks good doing it. Every time she's getting a chase, she looks banging doing it. Those outfits. Oh my God. It's just so, well, I will say this, apart from, I didn't like that, like, grey, that grey, clingy, flowy, like, cardigan she wears in the fourth. I'm like, it's a bit, like, she's only gonna be, like, in her mid-30s, late 30s. She's not, like, come on, like, she's a badass. Like, don't give her a little, like, old lady cardigan. Like, come on.
I think, sort of, her fashion was like great, and then sort of older she gets, the more it sort of like gets worse. Like the fourth one, she runs around in that turquoise fucking blue shit with the, and I'm like, why are you dressing like an old woman with nine cats? Stop it, you're sitting in fucking Prescott. I get it's been a hard life, but bitch, your book is getting you some coin. Put some fucking clothes on, you're about to get chased, you have to look good.
Not walking around in that little, like, I don't know, like the thinnest cardigan that's ever been made.
Oh, horrible. That is.
Now, let's talk about the moment we finally find out that it's Stu and Billy are the ones that are the killers. It's finally revealed. It's probably, again, we're going to say the word iconic again. It's another iconic movie scene that's just so good. And then when you find out, it was either 12 days or 25 days they shot that whole scene, and like every single day, like the actors had to get their like bloody clothes wet, like they couldn't wash them, like they had to wear the same bloodied clothes because for continuity. Yeah. And they were just like covered in blood. And it was like, I read, I survived scene 128, because that was that scene. Like, oh, after it's like they have this like inside joke about they got like a little like keepsakes that said, I survived page 128, because that whole scene is so iconic. When Billy and Stu like just completely lose it and are just you can tell like they've got a few screws loose. Yeah, and their dynamic is so funny. And Matthew Lillard is so funny when when he does all of his like ad libs, when he ad libs about the phone, and when he's like, but wait, there's more. And that is such. He's so good and so funny. And I weirdly, in this movie, I weirdly would fuck Stu.
See, I think I kind of would until he slabbers over himself. And I'm like, oh, I don't mind that. I'm like, that's actually kind of good thing. Yeah, I'm like, I mean, a little spit never hurt nobody. So I was like, maybe I'd be down to clown. But I think it's because he is so psychotic. And they do an amazing job of going, oh yeah, here's someone that's a murderer, and just go, oh, they're psycho, we have to believe them. No, they really go that extra mile and show us just how psycho they are. You have one of the best scenes where they stab each other. A woozy.
Yeah.
And like,
you hit me with the phone, dick.
That's just how demented they are. Hit me with the phone, dick.
And that was all, that was improvised.
Yeah,
and that was all improvised because Skeet wasn't like accidentally like the phone slipped out of his hand and he wasn't supposed to hit him and then he did, and it's just, and they've got some of the best thing about the film is that scene. So
And also the line as well where he says, "I always had a thing for you, Sid." He ad-libbed that line because them two were in a relationship at the time that was obviously happening.
That
was being filmed, so he just put that on there. Yeah, because they were in a relationship, so he just put that on there because he thought it'd be funny. And Wes Craven was like, no, I really like that. Because then it made it out that as if that Stu also wanted a piece of Sydney. I mean, who didn't? You had Stu, Randy being Randy for Sydney, and then of course you had Billy, who was just trying to get a bit of puss. You know, and she was like, I'm a virgin.
How about we set up for a PG-13 relationship?
relationship? PG-13 relationship? Relationship?
But yeah, that whole kitchen is just, and the way Billy describes like what they did to her mom, the whole thing, when he's talking about, you know, was it movies don't make...
Don't make psychopaths.
That's it.
Movies make psychopaths more creative.
That's it. Oh, so good. And again, meta. This film knows just what to do. And then when they kind of, that whole scene with when Gail pops back in and like, that's really fun. And then they, you know, he's going to fuck her up. And then oopsie, Sydney's gone. And then she just unleashes, when she's on the phone to them. Oh, she's so good.
Ah, oh, I love it. And that's it. I think for me as well, why I even love it so much more is that with a lot of anything really, there always has to be like a big set piece or all these different locations, very much like Scream 2 is very like, there's all these different places, but there's something I love about the fact that it's a house, the police car set aside, and then the news van, and they just use everything.
Yeah.
Everywhere. No part of the house is left untouched. There's not one part of anywhere that, there, you know, something's not happening. You have the bit in the car, the bit in the van. It's just, it's all contained in this one location. And that's just where all the madness is happening. And it just shows you how creative and original and like ahead of its time. It's that, you know, all this like endless shit just happens in like one location. And I love that. And I think that's what always puts this one an age above the rest, because it just, you know, whatever it was doing 10 out of 10, like near perfect, you know.
And that's something else that Scream does really well as a franchise is locations. In every single movie, pretty much every single location is just so good and well thought out and looks aesthetically pleasing, especially in the first one. You've got Casey's house, you've got Sydney's house, you've then got the likes of the fountain at the school. That is great.
Yeah, iconic.
You've got Sydney and Tatum like sitting on Sydney's porch and the whole thing where like the, ooh, ghost faces in the bushes. No, I don't believe it. That's so stupid, that bit.
Oh, no, ghost faces in the supermarket. No, it's not.
It's
like that annoys me. I'm like, he's not, like, Billy or Stu is not running around in that costume the whole time. People would see him, and they'd be like, excuse me, there's someone in that fucking hedge dressed in an outfit watching those girls.
So stupid. But yeah, no, every single location in this is just so good. And again, and the buzzword of the day, iconic. And it's like, it's not just the first one. It's the first, second, third, fourth. Every single one has so many good locations that they just find and make scary. It's just so well done and well thought out.
Yeah. Who would be... So let's start getting real controversial. I want you to not rank, but who would be, of course, other than Sydney, I want you to rank sort of the main characters. Like, who would be like your least favorite, you know? I know we love them all, but who would be like your least favorite character?
Of like the main one.
Yeah, of the main bond. So you can't say like Steve. You can't say someone like that. You know, that's and you can't say you just love them all, because we do love
them all. Yeah.
You know, we like our children more than others, you know?
This is going to be controversial, but it's going to be Billy. But I like Billy in the end when he's like, cuckoo, ca-choo. But for the rest of the film, I'm like, I mean, he's sort of like, I mean, Skeet's great, bless him. And Skeet's sexy as well. But he's sort of like one note.
He is.
Apart from the two scenes that are really good is the one in the video store, and then that whole entire final act when when he goes completely cuckoo.
Mm-hmm. It's like he's someone that he's a brilliant character, because he's obviously brought on to be the red heron. That it's so obvious that you say to yourself, "This is so obvious, it's not possibly him." And then when it is, you realize that his sole purpose is just to come across like a psychopath. And he comes off more like unhinged than Stu. Stu just looks like a bit more like Doolally. But Billy's a lot more sinister, you know? And that nice combination, the two, they like complement each other. And I don't think any of the other killers can ever really top them. You know, they're the OGs. They've got the proper motive. You know, they're the one that everyone else is like, well, I done it because she done it because he done it. So I'm doing it, you know,
to be fair, like Billy's mom has, you know, a fair point. So she's got a good motive. Whereas Mickey,
she's
you're like,
a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. And Mickey, you're like, you're scared. Okay. Like, your motive is sketchy.
Yeah.
Roman is just like, okay.
Oh, Roman, give it a rest. Yeah. See you later. And then, of course, the fourth one, which I think anyone like related, so Billy's mom or Jill, they're like my fucking captains.
Yeah,
you know.
Sure. Yeah. Top tier.
Top fucking tier. And then your Charlies and your fucking what do you call them again from the second one, Mickey? They're bottom tier shit right there. I was like, You're just the help. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think Mickey is probably the sexiest killer we've had.
And I mean, I want him to tear me up, you know?
Yeah.
100%. But that's why with Billy and Stu, they were both doing it, you know? Even though it felt like Stu was sort of accompanying Billy, they were still very much both in it. While then with other ones, it's like Mickey is the side goat. You know, Charlie was the side goat to like someone else's, you know, antagonist. And that's why this one is just that.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. Billy and Stu were on par, even though they made out like, oh, Stu is the more like wacky one that's completely like off his rocker. I feel like he did that on purpose to sort of like be like, no, I'm like the crazy loud one. When actually he was just as involved in the planning. He wasn't like it was all Billy. It was both of them. He was as much of the planner and the mastermind as Billy was, even though they tried to make out like, oh, Billy's the one in charge. No, Billy was just going to always fuck him over at the end. But, you know, Stu was never, in Billy's mind, Stu was never going to be, he was always going to be the sole survivor. He was never, like what Jill does.
So, do you think that? Because I always thought that the two of them really wanted to survive. I always thought the reason why he fucks Stu up so much is because he gets angry that Stu stabs him too far, so he just like knifes him.
See, I got the sense that I get from Billy is like I do like the whole. I don't think they were in a relationship, but I feel like there was definitely something between them.
I mean, they definitely they fanning about each other for sure.
Yeah, for sure. to me, the impression that I get from Billy was that, yeah, he was in it with Stu and they were down and they were, whatever, they were partners. But I feel like Billy's the type that would have, at the very last minute, been like, nah, it's all me. Like, yeah. He'd fuck anyone over because he does, you know, by doing what he does. So I don't feel like Stu was safe. No, so I feel like in that moment when he's stabbing Stu, when he's stabbing Stu, now I think it's for calculated reason. He's like,
ooh,
I could like actually kill you trying to come across like I'm not trying to kill you, but I'm gonna do it anyway because why not?
See, I never thought of that before. I always just thought it was like the two of them were gonna, you know, go on till the end and there would be like the two of them, but that Billy just gets so carried away because he gets so angry, and that just really shows obviously how chaotic he is, which he still does. But it's interesting that you say that. Do you think Stu is alive, or do you think he dies?
I mean, well, if you really want to go there, because Matthew makes a cameo in too, so you could argue that, well, no, Stu was at that party, like just chilling.
Oh, that yeah. But people, like, he was there. I was like, he was just like, hi. Do you know, everyone's like, there he is.
It was all by mistake. He was literally just visiting someone. It was like, oh, just come in the background of this. I don't know. It really is. One, when you watch the scene, it's like, well, how can someone really, really survive all those stab wounds and then a telly to the face? So it's a bit like, right, it would be far-fetched. However, at the same time, not that far-fetched because you don't really feel like he has died, even though he makes those like weird, like, whoo noises.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if they wanted to, like, in the new Scream, like, just spring it on us that, oh, wait, there's more because Stu's actually alive, I'd be like, I mean, it's believable. It's not completely out of the realm of possibilities.
Yeah, and he's also expressed major interest. Like, he loves the idea of maybe him coming back, and he would, like, do tweets and stuff when people had said, and he was like, no, he would, like, he wants Stu to be alive. And he says, Stu's alive. He's like, in my head, he's not dead. And he's saying that because he's gaslighting us. He wants us. He knows we want him in the new film. And it says, you know what I mean? But all them stab wounds and a TV to the face, I mean, if I wasn't dead, if I wasn't dead and I'd be taken to, you know, the hospital, then jail, I'd fucking pretend I was dead.
Yeah.
All right. Like, there I died. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, iconic.
What do you feel about, you know, when Sydney like pops out of the closet and like that you see the little, is it a retractable end of the umbrella like sticking to Billy? It's so good though, because it does, I mean, you can tell what it is, but it also does look like it really hurt.
No, so if you watch it, he got an operation somewhere up here, like on by his collarbone, he had this operation. So they had to obviously do that stunt. So he had padded there where obviously the retractable umbrella goes. And you can see the point where it misses the pad and it actually went into his stitches. And so when you watch it, he like lets out a yelp, but the very last one that she does, he properly lets out a yelp, and that's real. She got him by accident on where he had an operation and where there were stitches, so she actually drove it into his like fresh wound. So when he falls to the ground in agony, he was really falling to the ground in agony.
So that's twice. She does that twice. So she fucks up Billy, and then she actually stabs what's his face, Roman, in the third one.
She actually then stabbed him, didn't she, with a thing?
So she fucked. So she is lethal. Like, you don't want to mess with Sydney / Nev. Like, she'll fuck you up.
Don't even like mess with Nev Campbell. Period. Not even Sydney Prescott. You have to worry about. She's over here with fucking retractable fucking ice picks and literally driving them into people's. And wasn't it the guy obviously that plays Roman? He said he was like, I was genuinely screaming. He was like, she was like driving it into my fucking.
Yeah, Scott imagine? Foley.
And then Nev Campbell going, take it.
Method, but yeah, imagine that fucking ice pick to the shoulder. You'd be, Trooper though.
But yeah, like the retractable. Of course, like the retractable umbrella. There's the retractable knife as well that you can see in like the first 10 minutes. And those little things I always catch. And then it was like, no wonder why they made the Blade fucking CGI in the fourth one. They were like, oh, I'm sick of these fucking retractable knives giving up the ghost. They just fucking CGI'd it instead.
I mean, that seems like a lot of work. You would have thought between the first one and then 2011 that they'd got better at making like retractable, realistic looking knives.
Yeah, you'd fucking turn it out somehow, but yet Scream 4, a lot of the knife that you see is like not even real. It's just a handle. Weird. I don't get it. But this is what I've come down to. These are the only negative things that we can possibly say, which is a fucking masterpiece, one of the best horror movies of all time, ever. Ever.
And it's they're like this. Tiniest, like little nitpicky things that I have an issue with. Like, for example, that whole scene with the principal when he walks out of it happens every time when he walks out of his office and goes into the separate office. Someone was using some weird, like, fishbowl camera because the way that the whole shot is, you can see it's like really, it's like someone had used like a wacky mirror, and then wacky mirrors at a fair to make the shot because it's all like out of like, it's all like, ooh, and you can see it like how it's weirdly shot.
But that's what it comes to. Like, and these aren't things that are actually wrong with the film, just with like the editing or the continuity. Because really does, you know, it has to pick hairs. And when you've seen it as many times as we have, you can't help but just pick hairs sometimes. You know what? That's okay. That's just who
exactly.
We are.
And can we just talk about how insane Girl Weathers looks? You know, right at the very, very end where she's reporting live, right after it's all gone down. Yeah.
Stunning.
Oh, absolutely. So she's got like bloody hair, but like she just looks absolutely stunning. That whole shot, her face is just, oh.
I love playing the game where I watch Friends and I try to look for when she's filming Scream. You can see it with Scream 2 because there's, you know, the part where it's like Ross is with like Bonnie. And you know, she like shaves her head and you can see she has like little streaks through hair.
Yeah.
And then the next sort of shot, they're gone. And I love seeing stuff like that. But you cannot clock Monica Geller when she's Gail Weathers from Scream 1. She doesn't have that hair, you know?
No, because her hair's like brown and like with blondie bits, isn't it? Yeah.
And I always try and clock it. And I'm thinking for Scream 3 as well, why the fuck does she have that fringe? And why do we never see it again? Like, is it real? Is it real?
Yeah, it has to be. It like no one makes a wig with that fringe. Some hairstylist did that to her and was like, yep, this looks good. I mean, I always wonder about if at the time it was it good? Did she like it at the time?
I don't think that was ever cool. That is, it's like it should have been at least an inch longer. At least. Like it's actually too small to even do anything, so it just like sits out. You know what I'm saying?
It's like little like flyaways.
It just sits there like that. But I think Gail is like physically iconic in Scream 1. I think she physically gets more iconic, you know, like with the hair and the looks. But Scream 1 is a good starter, and as you said at the end, and she's bloodied and bruised and wearing that toffee suit. Oh, orgasm.
And she's just beat for the gods while she's like delivering the news. And it's just so delicious, that scene. And even though it's right at the very end, it's still, what a way to end us out, like with that scene.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have Moby playing that song that plays at the end.
I
fucking love it. Get it. Mm. I mean, it's not like a bop like that.
And then like the sun's coming up and it's like the whole.
Yeah. It's a vibe. It's an absolute vibe.
Such a vibe.
To even end it on, right? And this is even something small. I love the credits that it puts the name to, like, the face.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
The way they do the credits? I've never seen a film really do it like that since. And I just love even the credits. That's how much I love this film. I love the credits. And I kind of watch them too. You know what I mean? Like, when they happen.
That's part of the film. That's part of the experience of watching the credits.
Probably sit and watch the credits, like, period. So tell me this then.
Yeah.
Not that I think it goes without saying, but let me know your final thoughts, your final, like, how do you even put it into words? But try put it into words how you feel about Scream and how many axe wounds, never enough.
Well, yeah, no, never. I mean, what I wrote down for my overall verdict is words can't describe how much I love this movie. I just think it's just so good. And I've loved this movie for the longest time. I've always loved it. It's one of my favorite movies, if not my favorite movie of all time, above any other movie in any other like genre franchise ever. I just think it's just so good. The kills are great. The story, the plot, everything about this film just so good. It's hard to really put into words how much I love this movie. That's why, you know, I got a tattoo on my calf.
Exactly.
and I understand, like, this is me being extremely biased, but I'm giving it a big fat 10 out of 10 actors. I cannot realistically give it any less. I mean, I give it a 9 3/4. That's about it.
Yeah. I mean, I would give it the same. There's just no denying. It's just 10 out of 10. Excellence is 10 out of 10 always. Everything you said that, and all I can add is just it is a modern masterpiece.
It really is. It really is. Even not just in like the horror genre, even just in, like in cinema in general, this is one of the best like cinematic films. It's really of its time. And even now, it still holds up. You can't deny it still holds up to this day.
It's just so unbelievably influential.
Timeless.
It's so iconic. It's timeless. It's like, it's the ooh, the ah, it's the sensation. It's everything. It is everything. And that's why I just love for it every time. And I will never, ever get bored watching it. And if I ever turn on TV and screams on, I will, by my right of passage, watch it.
But then, do you ever do this thing that I sometimes do? Is if it's, if you catch it on TV and you catch it, like, say, midway through, I then have to go and find the first part and watch the first part. Because I can't just, like, come in halfway and go, this feels wrong. So I have to go back and find the first bit.
What happened? I need to rewind it. I have no idea what's going on.
I'm so lost. What happened? Why are they doing that?
Why are they doing that? Wait, who's this about? I need to rewind. That's just how much we love it. And you know what? Even though we're like, you know, taking our time to watch them so we can obviously do them, I cannot even explain how much I want to just go now and just watch like Scream 4. You know, I'm just I actually might. Fuck it, I'll watch it twice in 2 weeks. I'll do it, bitch.
I want to go and watch the second one so bad.
So bad. And just make your notes now and just, you know, be done with.
Be over. But
we've done it.
We have got it off our chest. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. Clap.
Hat in the back.
I don't know if there's anything that I left out. I don't think so. I hope not.
We even talked about retractable knives. I mean, I don't think there's anything. We've covered it, and that's just part one of four. And as long as it's been, bitch, everyone, y'all going to eat the next three up because they're going to be just as long and expect that level of detail. And we are not sorry about it, and I will not apologize.
Sorry, not sorry.
Not sorry. Sorry, not sorry. Sorry, I'm not sorry. Sorry, you won't make me apologize.
We've finally done it, and it's all out on the table. We left it all out on the dance floor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we cut this bitch up.
We popped the corn. We popped
and we fed the children.
Corn. The children were fed. In fact, the children won't need feeding again for at least another week when we bring you another feast.
They are stuffed.
Oh, you're stuffed rotten. And then the next week we'll stuff you rotten, and then the week after we'll stuff you rotten.
We'll just fill you bitches up.
Bon appetit, bitch.
Bon appetit, suck my clit.
Oh, keeping it classic, girl. Keeping it classic.
Always. And on that note, please go and find us on Instagram and Facebook at
Spilling Guts Podcast.
Find us on Twitter at
Spilling Guts Pod. Boom, boom.
You can email us on
Spilling Guts Podcast at outlook.com.
And then, and then please do like subscribe, give us a review, all that good stuff, all that good josh. Yeah,
talk to us about how much you love Scream 2. Come on, get into it.
We know you're all out there, bitch.
We know you're all out there, so please come feast with us and just let girls know. Come spill your guts with spilling guts, bitch.
Ooh, she got it.
Oh, work, bitch.
Well, on that note,
deuces.
Goodbye.